Welcome to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM on your dial. Next up, Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. Hold on tight. And thank you so much for listening. This is WRFG, and the RFG stands for Radio Free Georgia, by the way, if you did not know that. WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM on your dial, and of course, streaming at WRFG.org. And I would like to welcome you to Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I am your host, Greg Boston, and thank you so much for listening. If you are not aware, this is January the 25th, and it is Tuesday. And boy, yesterday was really beautiful anyway. And today too, to a certain extent. But anyway, I am excited to be speaking with you tonight, specifically because the show we're going to do is mostly an interview that was recorded by Katie Couric, of all people, speaking to a Jeopardy contestant who is a trans woman by the name of Amy Schneider. Amy is on a 38-game winning streak, and she is the one of the top five winners of all time already. She's still on that streak, and it's quite impressive. And what's really cool about Amy is, I mean, it's really cool that she's winning on Jeopardy, but what's really neat is the effect of a trans woman on Jeopardy, the effect that she is having on changing the minds and hearts of individuals around the country. For many people, this is the first exposure they've ever had to a trans individual, and she is just loved throughout the country. And I've often said that really to change people, to help increase our visibility and help the LGBTQ community, IA plus or whatever all the letters, the thing that we can do that is most impactful happens not really on the global stage, doesn't happen at rallies. It really, to me, happens on an individual one-by-one basis, one individual getting to know another individual. And this individual, Amy Schneider, has engendered all sorts of love and support. And so, you know, she's not meeting individuals in real life, but through television she is. And she's in the homes of all of these people that have never really seen anyone who's trans before. And so it's an unlikely way to change attitudes, but I think it's working. And so that's why I really wanted to highlight that. So we're going to listen to Amy talk a little bit about being on Jeopardy. But before we do that,
news of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh, no, she didn't say what.
All right. And first up is this year, 2022, marks the 49th anniversary of Roe versus Wade. And it is no coincidence that there is currently much discourse about the potential for the Supreme Court to overturn this decision. While Roe most distinctly affects abortion rights, there are in fact many communities who stand to lose ground in their fight for civil rights. One of the most prominent groups at risk is the LGBTQIA plus community. And this is because Roe versus Wade was the first case that determined all people have a right to privacy. We are not guaranteed this right to privacy through the Constitution. This decision opened the door for other cases, such as Lawrence v. Texas in 2003, which determined any laws banning sodomy or consensual sexual acts between partners to be unconstitutional. This was a huge win for the LGBTQIA plus community. Prior to this, sodomy laws could be used to discriminate and prosecute against queer individuals for consensual acts in their own private lives. Roe laid the groundwork for Lawrence v. Texas and other decisions, setting the precedent and establishing that a person can make their own private choices about their life and that the government has no right with which to interfere. Now, if Roe is overturned, there could be damning effects on the LGBTQIA plus community. Following the precedent set by Roe versus Wade and Lawrence v. Texas, came what many people in the queer community consider their biggest win yet, Obergefell versus Hodges in 2015. In that decision, the Supreme Court ruled that two people can marry each other legally regardless of their gender, based on the precedent establishing every citizen's basic right to privacy in their personal lives. While multiple states had, by the time the law passed, allowed same-sex marriage, by the way, Georgia was not one of them, having the Supreme Court protect this right federally was a huge step towards equality and certainly was the case in the state of Georgia. So you got to ask yourself, what is going to happen if Roe versus Wade is overturned? Aside from abortion care coming under even further direct attack in some states, the LGBTQI plus community faces losing the rights they've fought so hard to win. Simply put, if you can take away precedent with Roe versus Wade, then the leg of each subsequent case stands on can be briskly swept out from under it. So if we don't have the right to privacy, because that was the condition under which Roe v. Wade was instituted, if we don't have the right to privacy and to live our lives within the security established by that privacy, then that negates the precedent set for consensual relations and legally recognizing the relationships of LGBTQIA people. So, and if you don't think this can happen, well, let's wait and see, because there are plenty of people that think there is no chance that abortion rights will go away in this country. But let's see what happens, because it may. So hopefully I'm wrong about that. But let's just keep an eye on things and see what happens. All right. So Stella, this one is coming out of Germany. Stella Nyanzi, Ugandan LGBT ally, flees for safety to Germany. Ugandan LGBT ally and academic scholar Dr. Stella Nyanzi has fled to Germany with her children over fears of government persecution, arrest, and torture. It is not cool to be gay in Uganda, by the way. I refuse to be gagged. I refuse to be silenced, she wrote on her social media page on January the 19th as she prepared to leave the country of Uganda for Germany. Her departure came a few weeks after the arrest and alleged torture by security agencies of another dissident writer who is, couldn't begin to say this person's name, Kakwinza. It's the first name. But this person was a PEN award-winning activist who published tweets that allegedly insulted the Ugandan president and his son. And he was also named International Writer of Courage by PEN last year. And he has been illegally detained and tortured for criticizing the president and his son. On December 28th, after a series of tweets about the president, including one calling him a thief and his son a presumed successor, an incompetent pig-headed curmudgeon, gunmen forced their way into this individual's house and arrested him. Human rights groups condemned the arrest. Nyanzi wrote before her departure, "Go to where you are wanted. Go to where your skills and talents are appreciated. Go to where your children are safe, even when you speak and write ugly truths to power." So sad, but again, Uganda is not a cool place to be gay. That is for sure. All right. So next we travel not to Uganda, but to Ghana. A leading LGBTQ advocacy group in Ghana that has put a spotlight on what it calls the worst anti-LGBTQ bill ever is seeking donations from LGBTQ rights supporters worldwide in order to continue its work. For months, Rightify Ghana has been publicizing and opposing the efforts of the nation's anti-LGBTQ coalition to pass a repressive bill titled the, quote, Proper Human Sexual Rights and Ghanaian Family Values Bill. Boy, whenever you see family values, you know we're in trouble. The bill would expand Ghana's existing laws that criminalize gay sex by criminalizing a range of other activities associated with LGBTQ people. Specifically, it would prohibit public displays of same-sex affection, distribution of any material considered pro-LGBTQ, advocacy for LGBTQ rights and same-sex weddings. It would require citizens to report LGBTQ rights advocacy and homosexual activity to the police, essentially criminalizing anyone who is friends or family or even associates with queer people. The bill also encourages the use of so-called, quote, conversion therapy, a pseudoscientific treatment that some claim to be able to make gay people straight, but which has been denounced as ineffective and abusive by most reputable medical associations. So this bill in Ghana is on the move here, and this organization, Rightify Ghana, a nonprofit organization, was founded in 2020 to help raise awareness in Ghana and is fighting. So if you want to make a donation, go to Rightify, so that's Rightify Ghana, Rightify Ghana, to help gay people, queer people out that live in Ghana. All right. Next up, we'll just do a couple of these things. Venezuela. On an early morning in 2013, a soldier alerted a supervisor that a comrade had left his post. He had seen the man getting into a car with another man who, quote, looked gay, prosecutors said in court documents. A sergeant rushed to the car, ordered the soldier to return to his post, grab the other man's ID card. Officials later collected forensic evidence from the scene and ordered the soldier to lower his pants, looking for proof that the two men had had sex. The soldier was convicted of abandonment of service and, quote, sexual acts against nature. He was sentenced to 2 years in prison and banned from the military for life. The prosecutor, who repeatedly quoted soldiers using derogatory words for gay men, deemed his actions dishonorable, unseemly, and unworthy of the military. Nearly a decade after that arrest, that happened in 2013, and more than 10 years after the United States repealed its Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, Venezuela continues to prohibit gay sexual activity between service members, punishable by 1 to 3 years in prison. The article in the Military Code of Justice makes the socialist nation one of the last countries in Latin America to criminalize homosexuality. Now, for the first time, here's the good news. Venezuela's highest court has announced that it will weigh the constitutionality of this law. The decision of the Supreme Court of Justice comes 5 years after the advocacy group Egalitarian Venezuela filed a lawsuit asking for it to repeal the provision. So we'll see what happens there. So that's a bit of good news. And let's see, who else might we... Let's go to Israel. I've always wanted to go to Israel. In June of last year, gay rights activist Omri Feinstein from Israel asked queer people on Instagram to share their strong stories of sexual harassment and assault, and he could never have been prepared for the response. The amount of stories I received was absolutely insane. It was obvious that people were just waiting for the conversation to start. Omri didn't know it at the time, but that simple act, the act of allowing people to bear testimony to their own trauma, would spark a new movement in Israel. He received so many messages from LGBTQ people sharing their own stories of sexual violence that he decided he needed to do something about it. So He wanted queer people to have a forum where they could be heard and seen, where stigma could be shattered through the simple act of talking. So there is an Instagram account called Our Turn. Since then, countless queer people have shared their stories of sexual assault. It's no longer on Instagram, and Israeli media outlets have been quick to call it what it is. It's their country's first version of the Me Too movement. So that's cool. Good for Omri Feinsteiner. And, you know, I thought Israel was fairly liberal, but apparently you can find hatred anywhere if you look far enough. And actually, we should look to Florida to see what's going on there. A Florida House committee on Thursday passed a bill seeking to ban discussions of sexuality and gender identity in school classrooms, which the LGBTQ plus advocates say will effectively erase LGBTQ plus history, culture, and students. The Parental Rights in Education Bill, also known as the Don't Say Gay Bill, passed Thursday in the House Education and Employment Committee, largely along party lines. That means the Republicans were for it. This bill is about defending the most awesome responsibility a person can have, being a parent, said State Representative Joe Harding, who first introduced the bill on Thursday. That job can only be given to you by above. Harding's bill, along with its companion bill introduced Tuesday by Florida State Senate Senator Dennis Baxley, would block teachers in Florida from talking about LGBTQ plus topics that are not age appropriate, developmentally, or developmentally appropriate for students. Can I just say how wonderful it would have been had I been able to sit in a classroom and hear about history of gay activists and to hear about gender identity and discussions of sexuality in a way that was not shaming. The only thing I heard in school was people calling me fag. So I don't know. Yeah, I think it would have changed my life. So Florida continues to be crazy, and you know the governor is going to sign that thing. So I'm sure it'll be challenged ultimately in the Supreme Court. So we'll see what happens. All right. So I think that is it. The only other thing I did want to cover, which I usually cover at the beginning, but I didn't, is COVID, which now it is on its way back down, just like it happened in the other in other countries like South Africa. The high on January 9th was a 7-day average of new COVID cases of 18,000, and that is now down to 15,960. So it is coming down. So that is good. Just wear your masks, be careful a little longer, and hopefully we will be done with this Omicron thing. And then hopefully maybe we'll be done altogether. Who knows? We will be right back.
Carnivals and cotton candies, carousels and calliopes, fortune tellers in the glass cages. We will all wait.
This is Gifford.
All right, and welcome back to, that was obviously the Jeopardy theme. Welcome back to Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting the queer community. I'm your host, Greg Bossen, and welcome to the show. And tonight, I want to focus on Amy Schneider. And for those of you that do not watch Jeopardy, Amy Schneider, who is a member of the trans community, and she's in Oakland, California. If you've not heard about this, she is winning big on Jeopardy. And I think it's really important. She's actually in the top five of the all-time winners, money-wise. She's on a 38-game winning streak. And so she's become something of a celebrity. And it's what's really neat about this, in my view, and this is something that was I took out of the New York Times, an article about her. What could be more mainstream than Jeopardy? And so here she is, a trans individual on Jeopardy. So I think what's happening is she's changing minds and hearts individually, and you're going to hear more about this. But I'm going to start off by playing just a little 3-minute piece on this that was on National Public Radio about Amy Schneider. So let's listen.
When Amy Schneider was in eighth grade, her class voted her most likely to compete on Jeopardy. That prediction became a reality last November. That night in Final Jeopardy, Schneider came back from second place and won, besting then 5-day champion Andrew Heath.
Amy Schneider, with $31,600, you are our new Jeopardy champion.
It was just kind of overwhelming, just something I've been wanting my whole life. And to get it so unexpectedly at the last second was just really a special feeling.
Schneider grew up in Ohio, and she credits her parents for nurturing her love of learning and her lifelong obsession with Jeopardy.
I can't ever remember not watching Jeopardy. It was one of the things, it was just on every night, and I would watch with my parents.
After that first win, Schneider won again. And again, and again, and she started on a streak that went on to shatter records, often taking home huge totals.
$50,000 game, $56,000 today. That gives you $61,800, your biggest payday to date.
Schneider admits the game can get pretty tense, but she's got a strategy for that.
To sort of pump myself up before each game as I was standing at the podium, kind of run through the lyrics of Eminem's Lose Yourself, because it was just so fitting to the moment, like he says.
Last Friday, with an astonishing 28th consecutive win, Schneider reached a major milestone.
A 28-day total of $1,019,600. Amy Schneider, you are just the fifth millionaire in Jeopardy history and only the fourth to do it in regular season play.
Wow. In addition to millionaire, Schneider also holds the titles of highest winning female contestant and the first openly trans contestant to qualify for the show's Tournament of Champions.
Over the course of her record-breaking run, Schneider has captured the hearts of trivia nerds and catapulted to fame. And although she's dealt with some misogynistic and transphobic harassment online, she says the response overall has been positive.
It really is like a much smaller percentage than I expected, honestly, of negative, you know, feedback that I've been getting. I thought it would be worse. And like, as anyone should on the internet, I stay out of the comments sections, and that's good for my mental health.
At the end of the day, Schneider doesn't let the bigotry get to her, focusing instead on the positive impact of her visibility.
So someone wrote on Twitter, "Somehow, after 2 to 3 years of conversation, you being on Jeopardy every night has taught my dad to be accepting of trans people. You're the first person he's used correct pronouns with, an 83-year-old man saying, 'This isn't too hard. Thanks for your message of love.'" And that is just one of the best things I could hear. And that I've been able to do that, give people that experience. And if I'm helping them, that's what I want to do most of all.
Jeopardy champion Amy Schneider. Tonight, viewers find out if she's got what it takes for win number 29.
And hey, NPR.
And she definitely did. And she definitely did have what it takes. That that recording was done a couple of weeks ago, and at this point, she is now on a 38-game winning streak. So when we come back in a second, we're going to play an interview that she did with Katie Couric. So I really want to focus on this because, I don't know, I think it's really important to honor trans individuals. And this is something that our straight ally friends and straight people in general can really get their head around, somebody winning on Jeopardy. So with that, we will be right back.
Donate your car, truck, or boat. It's easy, and we can put it to good use. and you get a tax receipt. Simply call our toll-free number. We pick up your vehicle, running or not. Send you a tax receipt. It only takes a few minutes. Call our toll-free number at WRFG-CAR, or you can call the number at 844-973-4227 to arrange a free pickup. All proceeds benefit your favorite community radio station, 89.3 FM, WRFG.org. We thank you.
Are back. That was beautiful from Christina Aguilera. Welcome back to Alternative Perspectives. And so, again, we want to highlight on the show today or tonight a trans hero, Amy Schneider, who is on a 38-game winning streak on Jeopardy. And so I want to play for you a little bit of an interview that she did with, of all people, Katie Couric, another mainstream individual. And this interview was just 3 days ago. So we're going to listen to the two of them talk a little bit about Amy's experience on Jeopardy and as a trans woman. Again, she is on a 38-game winning streak. She is the first woman who has gotten in the top five, I believe. And anyway, it's just inspiring. And she's just a really cool individual. And what she's been doing to change hearts and minds around the trans community is, I don't know, it's just amazing. All she's doing is being herself, which is all any of us really can do. But anyway, let's go ahead and listen to the interview.
She is now at 36 victories. We don't know what happened tonight, but I'm assuming that'll probably be 37. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
How are you? So nice to see you.
Likewise. I'm doing well.
Well, first of all, congratulations. You are on fire on Jeopardy. I was just kind of giving your brief rundown about how well you're doing. Right now, you're at 36 victories. We don't know what's going to happen tonight, but we'll all be watching, obviously. You're the first woman to win more than $1 million. You're making you the most successful female contestant on Jeopardy, and you're the first transgender contestant to place in the show's iconic Tournament of Champions. So, Amy, we're going to give you a round of applause. I made Adriana find all these sound effects. So here, hold on. Congratulations, Amy. So first of all, I mean, we've got so many questions from my followers on social media and people. Someone just said, Amy, we love you. We're really enjoying your run. You are getting a lot of love out there, Amy. First of all, I mean, how does it feel to be so celebrated for your incredible accomplishments?
It feels good. It's been a surreal experience these last couple of months. And, you know, I had some anticipation coming in that there might be, you know, potentially a lot of negativity and things like that. And I've been really just overwhelmed by how little negativity there's been and how so much positive. It's been really great. I was saying early on, it's like all of a sudden now there's like apps on my phone, like Twitter, where I can just open them up and see a bunch of strangers saying nice things about me, which is a nice thing to have.
It's so reassuring. I think, you know, we've gone through such a hard time in this country and with COVID and with so many other things going on. It's just wonderful to be able to celebrate. And I have to say, I am heartened and encouraged that that so many people are celebrating you and appreciating you and really cheering you on. Well, let me ask you some questions if I could. I asked you how you felt and you just told me. Here's some other questions. You know, how stressful is it? Because, you know, I wondered if you're exhausted after every show, because it, you know, it is a very tense situation. To say you have to be at the top of your game is an understatement. So how are you feeling? Are you completely energized or are you exhausted?
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, one thing about it is that they tape 5 episodes in a day.
Right.
So by the end of that, I am definitely exhausted. But, you know, during the game itself, like, even if I was feeling tired before it, I don't really notice, you know, like, you have to be so focused on what's going on and ready to answer the next question. And it moves so fast, you know, there, as soon as you answer something, there's another clue coming and you've just got to, you know, keep your concentration on that. And there's just no time to be tired.
Do you ever draw a blank? You know, I'm always so afraid that I'm just going to, my nerves are going to get the best of me. And I'm just going to draw a blank and be like, even if I know the answer, I'm just going to be like, biddy, biddy, biddy.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I draw blanks sometimes. There was one on last night's show, I think it was, where it was the Olmecs, and I was watching it at home being like, come on, you know this. Why didn't you, you know, ring in there? but I think that's generally not been stress. It's just that that's how the human brain works. The one place I think that has happened is in Final Jeopardy. I think, you know, when it's a situation where I've wagered a lot of money on it, and I don't immediately know the answer, I have kind of gone into panic mode a couple times. And you know, that's no way to think. And it hasn't been helpful. So that's something, yeah, I need to work on.
Well, somebody asked if you change for each game. And, you know, and I should mention that you do change between shows. So it's funny. That's sort of like a little secret of Jeopardy, that you do have to record several shows just in one day, and it is exhausting. Well, let me, you know, everybody wants to know, and I know you've talked about this, so forgive me if I'm making you answer the same questions, but you know, honestly, you're so smart and you know so much, and I think that is just I mean, you've just been dazzling people by your wealth and your breadth of knowledge. So how did you become such a brainiac? I know that your mom was a huge influence. And I think it's so funny, by the way, that you got voted most likely to appear on Jeopardy when you were in eighth grade.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that reflects, you know, a couple of advantages that I had. The first of which is just kind of luck of genetics, that my memory has just always been good. You know, things stick with me in a way that's not as easy for other people. And the other one being, you know, the environment I was raised in, being raised by parents that loved knowledge and learning and passed that love on. But I think,
by the way, Amy, I love the shout out that you gave to your mom. It was so sweet. And is your mom still alive, right? And
yeah.
Is she watching you? Do you talk to her? And I don't know if your dad's still alive as well, but does your mom, like, is she must be so tickled.
Yeah. Yeah. She's still with us. She's in a retirement home in Dayton, Ohio. And everybody there is talking about it. It's pretty.
You're the talk of the retirement home.
Indeed. Yeah. And, yeah, you know, we talk and, you know, my dad has unfortunately passed away, and, you know, he was a part of the story too. He actually tried out for Jeopardy when I was a kid and almost made it on. And, you know, definitely shared that love of learning. And I think that's, you know, that part of it, the love of learning, is something that anybody can have, regardless of what you were born with. Like, if you can find that love, then you're just going to learn stuff just by doing what you enjoy, just by reading things that interest you and seeking it out. And that's definitely, I think, been the key to, you know, a lifetime of doing that is what got me here.
And I love what you talked about with your mom, because I think this is so instructive for parents everywhere, in that, you know, it's not rote memorization. it's kind of unraveling and being curious about the etymology of a word. And I think you used the example. What did you use about Greek, about architecture, about what?
Stoic.
Stoic. And sort of finding the root of that and kind of looking at how everything is connected, which is so cool too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think another part of it that kind of goes along with that is not being too sort of results oriented. You know, I mean, like, first of all, that was, you know, it was easier for her to do that because I had good grades, you know, all the time. And so, and that sort of thing. But I think it, you know, she really was focused on it's valuable for itself. It's not valuable to get good grades or get into a college or whatever else. Those are nice side effects, but it's just valuable knowing things.
That's great. Well, I think, you know, again, to always be questioning and always be searching and always being kind of digging a little deeper, which is so awesome. Okay, let me do some. I'm going through my questions, and then I'm going to get to all of them on social media. You let me know when you have to go, because if you're tired or whatever, Amy, I don't want to keep you too long, but I'm so excited that you're doing this. So, okay. So I know that you psych yourself before every show by listening to Eminem, Lose Yourself. Why that song and what does that do for you? And tell me kind of why you picked that song and what it does for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think partly it's just like one of the all-time iconic like pump-up songs, you know. So when I was, it was part of a whole playlist I made that I called Victory Morning for like the morning when I was getting ready and driving to the studio. But that one, you know, when I was listening to it, like really struck me how applicable it was to what I was doing because, you know, Jeopardy is something that you only get one shot at. And it, you know, it was a chance, especially as it went on and I was realizing it was a chance to really, excuse me, to really make an amount of money that could change my life. And that, you know, I was never again in my life going to get a chance to, you know, make $120,000 in a day. And this is the only time I would get to do it. And so I really needed to take this opportunity and not think about anything outside of it.
What is your winning so far?
It is $1.1 million, somewhere around there.
That's just awesome. And as I said, you're on a 36 game winning streak. I'm not going to ask you how you did tonight, but we got a lot of questions about the buzzer technique because you see people sort of, you know, pushing the buzzer and there's a very specific technique for Jeopardy. Like you have to wait until the question's read, right? Before you hit the buzzer. Was that hard to kind of get adjusted to?
Yeah, I mean, I'd, you know, kind of researched and read about it. And so I knew, you know, sort of basically how it worked. And I'd been practicing as best I could. And, you know, I'd have a little pen with me whenever I was watching at home.
but ballpoint pen?
Yeah. Yeah, just to get in the habit. But, you know, you don't really know until you're there. Because you don't have, you know, the electronic hookup and everything to know. And actually in my first game, you know, the strategy I had gone in with of sort of focusing on it and kind of like anticipating the last syllable, and it just felt like it wasn't working for the first half of the game or so. And for whatever reason, I just sort of decided to kind of stop thinking about it and just kind of go by feel and instinct. And that, like, worked great, you know, and from then on, I was really good at the buzzer, and that was definitely the thing that I couldn't have predicted. I had no idea whether that would be something I would be good at or not until it happened.
Yeah, and it's just that, you know, that you have to get right in the nick of time, and it's like every second really counts. And the other question about strategy is my husband asked me to ask you this because you really bet big on Final Jeopardy. You really swing for the fences on that. Is that part of your strategy too? Is that to boost your earnings? Because, you know, I guess it also is indicative of how confident you feel, right?
Yeah, but I think that anybody who's playing Jeopardy should feel confident. I mean, if you're on Jeopardy, you are probably more than 50% likely to get any given question. So, you know, in the long run, it should average out to being the right strategy to bet as much as you can. I think, you know, it's hard to do that in the moment. Like, it was hard to get used to betting, you know, a car on a single question.
Yeah.
But, you know, I knew that, like, the math said it was the right thing to do, so I tried to stick with it.
And your final Jeopardy answer rate percentage, as someone just pointed out, is absurdly high, right? I mean, you've done really, really well. I don't know, do you keep track on what percentage of the final Jeopardy questions you've gotten correct?
Not really the exact percentage. I knew that, like, especially at the beginning, it was going really well. And then last week, it kind of suffered a little bit. But, you know, still overall, I knew it was averaging out to pretty good. You know, it's funny, they rolled out the sort of, like, statistics element of their game in a kind of bigger way than they had before during my run. And so, you know, Ken would be, like, at the beginning of a show, like, saying some statistics of what I had accomplished, and it was always like, really? Wow, that's really good.
You know, Ken seems like such a nice guy, and I think he mentioned that you all have spent quite a bit of time chatting, and, you know, gosh, it's hard because, you know, you run out of things to do in the chat section, right? So he's had to interview you so many, many times. But have you enjoyed getting to know Ken?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I mean, our ability to chat is somewhat limited just because he's the host and has to, like, maintain a certain neutrality. So right. It's, you know, before and after each game, we chat. And then obviously during that segment during. But I really liked him a lot. He's such a good presence on stage. He sets everybody at ease, makes everybody feel comfortable. You know, it's a stressful job because it is a long day, you know, for all the crew and everything that's there. And, like, we stay until all five episodes are done. And so, you know, there's kind of anytime something has to be, you know, we have to go back and retape something or anything, that's that much longer before we get to go home. And so he's so relaxed about it all. And it's just really great to have him on stage.
I also like, you know, when he gives the answer, you think, oh, he probably did actually know that, you know, because he's so smart. And a lot of people, obviously, somebody asked if you had met Matt Amodio, right?
Right.
I pronounce his name correctly. Have you met him?
I haven't met him in person, no. We've chatted a bit on Twitter, but yeah.
Aren't you poised to surpass his record?
Yep, that's right. If I win today and tomorrow, I'll be tied, and Monday would, in theory, surpass his record, yeah.
And Ken, I guess his record is 74?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's, like, I can't really fathom that now that I've been through it. I mean, it was always impressive. But to realize, you know, at this point during the taping, it felt like I've been playing Jeopardy forever. And yet I'm still only halfway to his streak. Like, just the endurance is, like, I'm just even more impressed by that streak than I once was.
Okay, so.
All right, we're going to stop here and take a quick break. You are listening to Alternative Perspectives, and we're listening to an interview where Katie Couric is actually interviewing Amy Schneider, who is on a winning streak. She's a trans individual in Oakland, a trans female. And she is in Oakland, California, and she is on a 38-game winning streak. So she's changing hearts and minds. We will be right back.
Over time, I've been building my castle of love.
You are listening to WRFG Atlanta. WRFG provides a voice for those who have been traditionally denied access to broadcast media through a broad base of community elements to guarantee that access. And the utilization of the facilities and in its programs, the following communities will receive first priority.
those who continue to be denied free and open access to broadcast media, and those who suffer oppression or exploitation based upon class, race, sex, age, creed, sexual orientation, disability, or immigrant status.
To learn how you can support WRFG's mission, please go to WRFG.org.
All right, and welcome back to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM on your dial. And you are listening to Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting the queer community, and that's Alternative Perspectives. I am your host, Greg Bossen. Thank you so much for listening. And we are actually listening to an interview that Katie Couric, of all people, did a couple, 3 days ago with Amy Schneider, who is on Jeopardy. She's on a 38-game winning streak. And why does it matter to us here at Alternative Perspectives? That is because she is trans. So let's continue listening to our interview.
Okay, so let me do some other questions, because then I really want to get to everybody who responded on social media. Are there categories that what do you feel are your best categories? What is your favorite super specific topic of knowledge you've been able to flex during your run? In other words, do you sometimes see categories and you're like, oh, shoot, I'm not going to know anything about this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, like music kind of in general, like I have, you know, some limited areas of knowledge of music, but overall, I just don't know it that well. And it's such a broad topic that it's really hard to study for. So that's definitely one. Another one is like celebrity relationships and divorces and things like that. That's just not something I've followed in my life. And it's again, there's a lot of celebrities and they're all related to people, you know? So it's you know, that one is definitely one that I see that and I'm like, let's get that out of the way. But in terms of what...
I'm glad you don't. That's reassuring.
Yeah. I would say that for... ones that I feel stronger in, I think definitely like geography is something I've loved since I was a kid.
I hate that.
I just have been fascinated by maps my whole life.
And Shakespeare and Broadway plays are both really strong suits for you.
Yeah, I haven't felt like I've done as well on Broadway as I should have, being a theater kid. But definitely. And I've done a ton of Shakespeare. I've read most of the plays, except for some of the histories. And yeah, definitely Shakespeare is a strong suit.
I'm surprised you're not better at music, because I feel like music and sort of intelligence are often entwined, right? If you have a musical ability. Did you not play an instrument growing up?
I did, but I just, like, you know, I don't, it's not that I don't listen to music. I just listen to kind of the same music I've listened to for the last 20 years. And I haven't, you know, paying attention to stuff outside of that.
All right. Let me ask you some other questions. I'm going to move on to the social questions. By the way, we love that you do a little recap on Twitter after every game. What started you doing that, by the way?
It was my plan. I did it for the first game just because, you know, it was the first one. And it was the one I remembered, probably the most clearly. People seemed to like it. And I realized that it was something that I'd always wanted to see. And maybe other people had been doing it and I just hadn't been aware. But I was like, well, this is content that, you know, I would like to read. And I'm one of the few people in a position to produce it. So I might as well keep going.
Let me ask you about being recognized. First of all, I think some people have asked, I know you're a software engineer, so if you've taken time off work and your office, all your colleagues must be going crazy.
Yeah. No, it's a pretty big deal on Slack, for sure. It's funny because I changed teams during the course of my run, so, like, only the VP was really aware of how many days I had missed to go down to LA. So people knew I had done well, but they didn't really know how well I had done until it started airing.
Meanwhile, I read that you actually got mugged at gunpoint or when you were walking in Oakland, which was must have been really scary. And on top of all this other stuff that, you know, being on Jeopardy and winning and doing so well, that must have been pretty unsettling, to say the least.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I have a tendency to, you know, in the aftermath of something like that, say, oh, no, you know, I'm fine. It was fine. Nothing, you know, nobody was hurt. Like, you know, and it took me a few days to realize that, yeah, that was a pretty traumatic thing to happen. But, you know, in fact, nobody was hurt. All I lost was stuff that can be replaced. And, you know, that's all, you know, I just have to have that attitude about it. You know, I've lived here years and it's never happened before. So it goes.
You know, I want to mention just trans people are four times more likely to be the victims of violent crime. And I know you don't want to make the show too much at all, Amy, about you being trans. And you've said, I'm a trans woman and I'm proud of that. Having said that, don't you think your presence and success on the show is providing a real opportunity to educate people? I know that we got so many responses from people who wanted me to express their appreciation to you. For being a proud trans woman and you know, representation is so critically important. So, that's not lost on you, I'm sure, is it?
No, not at all. You know, I think that like it's the best thing that's come out of this, is that, you know, all the messages I've heard from, you know, both trans people and families and loved ones of trans people, and especially those where, you know, people talking about, you know, parents and grandparents who, like, sort of for the first time seem to kind of get it, understand, you know, that I'm just a woman and it's, you know, not as complicated as they thought. And, you know, because Jeopardy reaches an older demographic, you know, that have had a lifetime of experience before trans people became, you know, accepted and visible. And so, you know, for a lot of them, this is kind of their first major exposure to a trans person. So that was definitely something I was very conscious of while we were taping the episodes, that I really needed to be putting my best foot forward the whole time, because I was representing a lot of people.
I did a documentary called Gender Revolution a few years ago, where I kind of went on a journey to try to help people understand the trans experience by talking to people from a 5-year-old to a 70-year-old. And I think that people just need to educate themselves. And I think that, you know, a lot of trans people don't want to be put in the position where they feel like they have to be the teachers. Having said that, I think just by being who you are is, you know, incredibly enlightening for people who are watching. So thank you for that. Okay, back to some viewer questions. What is your favorite game to play outside of Jeopardy? Are you playing Wordle?
I am playing Wordle. Off and on, I keep missing days. But, yeah, I've been playing it, for, you know, since everybody started playing it. Yeah. So I do that. I do the New York Times crossword. My girlfriend got me into Rummy Cube. We play that fairly often. Yeah.
Do you play words with friends?
No. It's for whatever reason. I've never had anybody ask.
Well, I challenge you to words with friends. It's okay. Would you ever consider hosting?
You know, I would. I don't think that I should be asked, because I think Ken's great. And I, as far as I'm concerned, the job is his. But, you know, if I was to be asked, I certainly would listen to that conversation. No question.
Who was your, like, did you have any other favorite guest hosts that you saw do Jeopardy by any chance, Amy?
You know, I didn't actually watch. I watched. Yes? What?
Guest host.
Oh, right. Yes, I regret to inform you that I didn't actually watch a lot of the guest hosts. So, happened?
Break my heart.
I'm so sorry. What happened was, to be honest, I've got it on my DVR. They're all still on there, but I couldn't bring myself to watch Alex's last few games.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then once I'd gotten out of the habit, it just sort of like didn't get back into it as much. So I unfortunately I didn't see a lot of them. It's funny, I went to a kind of family reunion of my girlfriend's, and you know, at that point I knew I was going to be on the show and we mentioned it, and they all launched into a detailed breakdown of who all the hosts and who they liked and who they didn't. And I was like, boy, I really feel like I ought to be able to contribute here, but
someone just said awkward. Oh, come on, everybody, lighten up. Okay, I wanted to ask you if you had a chance to meet Alex Trebek, and I was the lucky person, and I got to meet Alex on several occasions and have gotten to know his beautiful wife, Jean. What do you think you would have said to Alex?
Friends would walk up to me and just be like, what the f*** is in your mug? And I would just tell them.
You know, I don't know. He was, I never got to meet him, but I did go to a taping once when he was the host. So I kind of got to see a little bit of how he is off camera. And he was just a very, like, you know, down-to-earth guy by everything I could see. So I don't know. I might have just, like, you know, asked him a sports question or something like that.
Yeah, he was a wonderful person and obviously much loved. We can only go for three more minutes because Jeopardy is starting to, will start on the coast. But what are you excited about doing with your winnings? You know, and how do you think that's going to change your life?
Well, I mean, I think definitely excited to travel. You know, my second real foreign trip was to Tokyo, and it was right as the pandemic was starting. And I really liked it, and I was like, I should really see more of the world, and then, you know, couldn't. So I'm excited to do that. And the other thing is that I'm going to, you know, like, potentially be using this to consider, you know, my career path. Do I want to try?
Think you'll change careers?
I think it's possible. I haven't decided that by any means, but, you know, I'm talking to somebody about writing a book. And other opportunities that might be coming out of this. And that's really the beauty of it, is that I now have the freedom to take some time to do that without worrying about the bills getting paid if I choose that route.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to watch you and to cheer you on. I think Jeopardy does start at 7:30 in some markets, as someone mentioned, but I think it starts at 7 in some other markets as well. So we want to make sure people get to watch you kick a little Jeopardy ass again. I'm just assuming you, because something tells me you might have canceled this Instagram live if it didn't go well. But no spoilers here.
Say that it is a very fun episode. I think, you know, fans of mine are going to like this one.
Oh, good. Well, again, Amy, thank you so much for spending some time with me. And before we go, we just want to say,
all right, so that was the interview between Katie Kirk and Amy Schneider, who's on a 38-game winning streak on Jeopardy, and she is the first woman and definitely the first trans woman to have gotten that sort of success on Jeopardy, and it's definitely changing minds throughout the country. So, and that's going to do it for our show. Thank you so much for listening to Alternative Perspectives. Next up, we have Peach State Festival. Have a good week. I'll talk to you next time. See you later.